You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Go Gamecocks podcast. A short and sweet look into South Carolina sports, presented by the State Newspaper. I am your host, Greg Hadley, and I am joined by reporter Ben Briner. Ben, we just got back from Knoxville, where we witnessed... Not
a great performance by South Carolina.
Not at all. A 41-21 loss, in which USC was a 4.5-point road favorite. Let's dive right into it. I mean, early on, going into this game, I think both fan bases were very upset at officiating, and it looked like that might be a storyline early on with a targeting call against Ryan Helinski and all sorts of different things. But really, in the second half, it seemed like we just saw a complete breakdown in South Carolina across all phases of the game. Most glaringly, the secondary just got torched by Tennessee. You took a look at the film a little bit. You've kind of broken down some of what went wrong in some articles online. Tell us what you were seeing and what allowed the Volunteers to just shred the Gamecocks like they did.
Well, the first thing is a lot of breakdowns in terms of one-on-one play. JT Ebay had a couple of plays he really, really probably wants to have back against Juwan Jennings. RJ Roderick got shook pretty badly on one. Ezra Mokwamu on a couple of them, kind of as he was covering a post route, just seemed to sort of get out of position, drift. His footwork kind of failed him a little bit. And that created enough space for either, there was one on-target ball and there was another ball that was maybe a little late getting there, but Mokwamu couldn't recover in time. Well, he could recover, but he didn't break up what ended up being kind of a 50-50 ball. So you just had a lot of bad play. You mentioned that third quarter, you're talking about five chunk passing plays. That is a lot for a Tennessee team that literally was lamenting a injured freshman quarterback and started the game with a young third stringer and then put Jarrett Garantano back in and was playing Juwan Jennings, a high school quarterback there. And South Carolina just kind of got worked in the passing game. And some of it was breakdown, some of it was really talented Tennessee receivers, but it's a pretty ugly look considering where this team had kind of, where Tennessee had kind of come in and where their offense has really been the last few years.
Yeah, and of course, Will Muschamp prides himself as a defensive coach and especially a coach of defensive backs. And it was just seemed like every other play from Tennessee was going for 20 plus yards. And related to that, South Carolina's pass rush didn't get too much in the way of a ton of pressure. I think it was credited with 3 QB hurries and 0 sacks. A lot of that was because the Volunteers were, you know, sitting back in max protection, really trying to give their quarterbacks, who, as you mentioned, are, you know, not necessarily the most highly touted people, a good clean pocket to throw the ball in. But we've been used to seeing Javon Kinlaw and DJ Wonnum just blow up plays all year long, and yesterday they weren't able to do it as much. When you look at that, and especially kind of maybe some of the looks South Carolina offered, what was going wrong?
I mean, I don't know that it necessarily had to do with the looks. It just seemed like South Carolina needed to cover for longer and cover better. And J.C. Horn, South Carolina star corner, kind of mentioned it. The Gamecocks were kind of caught in some bad calls at times. Jim Chaney, who kind of had a bad end at Georgia and is now offensive coordinator at Tennessee, he's a really good coach. And he was calling a lot of stuff that just kind of was doing the damage it needed to. I know I was looking at one of the bad passing plays in which it was a play action. They had ridiculous pass protection. There were only two receivers running routes. And somehow both of them managed to get open against South Carolina because they were in some kind of zone look, I believe. And literally you had a bunch of defensive backs in their zones waiting. And then you had a couple others just, you know, getting beaten very badly. So I think there's a little bit of that. I think South Carolina also just needed more push. They didn't, it seemed, play particularly well up front. And sometimes you just have to fight and force your way through. But the way they were protecting didn't help. And if that protection is there, South Carolina's guys got to cover for a while. And they didn't. And actually, if you look back at some of those big passing plays, South Carolina did have pass rushers that actually did get through and laid some actually pretty vicious hits. And still ended up being converted into a long gain.
And of course, the defense got the majority of the headlines, especially the secondary. But in that second half, South Carolina was shut out. Tennessee put together a 24-0 run to really just completely bury the Gamecocks. And I thought we could take a quick look at the offensive problems. Looking over the play-by-play in that third quarter, I was struck by they had three false starts and a delay of game on those first two drives of the second half. And the run game, I think, averaged less than 3 yards a carry. Ryan Helinski was fine. Went for over 300 yards, passed the ball over 50 times. A lot of his passes were either dropped or into good coverage, and sometimes he was just a little off. It just seemed like the offense, on a day the defense really needed to be picked up, and especially given some time off to regroup and regather on the sideline, consistently went three and out, consistently just failed to generate much push downfield.
Yeah, as you were kind of saying, penalties didn't help. Not getting sort of runs that could create some second and manageables and third and shorts also did not help. And the pass protection was kind of a major problem. Jalen Nichols, I think, is going to be a pretty good offensive lineman in South Carolina when it's all said and done. He is still a true freshman who, every time he does something good, that's pretty impressive. And there are times when he does not, because he is a true freshman in the SEC. And he had two or three plays where he just got beat, including one where he got beat badly on an inside move and left Lindsey sort of scrambling and going down for a big loss. And I think that that kind of thing sort of wears on you. Some of those drops don't help either. Some of them were the ball was a little behind or the ball was a little kind of in the wrong spot. But this is an offense, especially they've had some luck with these third and long draw plays. And that's in part because they just aren't that good of a third and long team at this point. No one really is a great third and long team, but their passing game isn't in the position where it can sort of assert itself a little bit more, attack vertically like that when the defense expects it. So I just think they don't quite have the pieces to get in a spot where they've got to go all shootout on someone. They had a couple of good response drives in this game, and they actually had not an insignificant number of chunk plays, to be perfectly honest, but none of them were really super long. But this is just an offense that has to be more efficient, and at the moment isn't more efficient, and really needs this defense to back it up. And if you're going to throw Ryan Helinski in that kind of shootout with a running game that isn't working, yeah, it ain't going to work out.
It's just not the time. He's maybe a little too young. Needs some time to develop. Two things I wanted to note. First, the offensive line, a mainstay on that unit, Sidarius Hutcherson, left the game with an injury. Coach Muschamp said afterwards that he's expected to be okay moving forward. But when you take him out, you had another starter in Dylan Wanham out. You had a guy who started the year in the lineup, was taken out, in Hank Manos, out with an injury as well. And then another starter from the beginning of the year, Eric Douglas, who was benched and then had to come in once Hutcherson was hurt. Basically, you're looking at a line that has really shuffled a lot and is relying on a lot of young players, not counting senior Donnell Stanley. And then the second thing I wanted to look at was the first drive. That was obviously an exciting start for South Carolina, the 75-yard touchdown pass from Ryan Helinski to Shai Smith. But looking at the stats, South Carolina actually generates 15% of their team's points on the first drive of the game, which is a disproportionately high number. It just seems like the Gamecocks can get off to these fast starts, but especially as of late, the second halves, they can't keep up that pressure.
Yeah, it definitely seems like some of their early game planning stuff is pretty solid, and I don't know if that's kind of having a few good plays in the back pocket, burning them early, that kind of thing. The play design on the Shai Smith play was an absolutely beautiful kind of look off of a fake screen pump and go. Usually teams try to kind of pump and then attack down the sideline. Instead, this, they pumped, I guess, kind of looked down the sideline and then hit Shai Smith breaking over the middle. It was a really good play. As I was kind of going through some of the film, it sort of struck me that South Carolina had sort of certain misdirection plays, certain kind of quirky stuff, but the problem is that really is only going to get you so far. And that kind of stuff, that'll steal you a play here and there, maybe it'll break you a big one, but overall kind of the meat of it, what makes an offense kind of move, is the basic stuff going against the opponent's basic stuff, either working extremely well, hopefully because of talent, but also because of execution and players doing what they can, and some of that will that Tavian Feaster had kind of talked about, that he felt that the team didn't have enough desperation or fight at certain points. And South Carolina just is at this point a little bit lacking on that front. Even if they throw kind of good curveballs, play to play, that's not sort of helping.
Yeah, you mentioned Tavian Feaster's comments. Let's take a quick listen to what he said.
Could you feel anything different kind of happening as that second half sort of started and settled in?
You know, we wasn't desperate to make the plays. You know, we kind of relaxed a little bit because we had the lead. But we got to be desperate to make the plays that are there and make the plays that aren't there. We just got to come out with an attitude. We just got to go get it.
What does desperate to make plays look like to you?
Diving to make plays, yards after contact, small things, you know, that it can lead to bigger plays. It's just everybody going out and giving 110%.
Yeah, so Ben Feaster said that, and senior offensive lineman Donnell Stanley said the Gamecocks needed to mature up as a unit after this game. Those are the kind of comments that 8 games into the year, that's pretty discouraging. There's just no good way to sell that. You know, this is a team that we're 3/4 of the way done. I mean, they can talk about maturing, but there's just not a lot of time left to do it. Where do you think the responsibility for that falls, for that failure?
I mean, I think most of it falls on the players. Some of it maybe on the coaches, but in the end, when you've got veterans sort of saying the foot came off the gas, that's pretty damning. That's pretty bad. And there's no exact way to measure that, but certainly if it's a feeling that the players have, that's a problem. And they had kind of had to fight in that first half despite blowing some of those coverages. And at points, you didn't really see sort of that fight. You didn't see securing some of those tough catches. So the question is that something they can turn around? And if it's something they can turn around looking forward, can they win against a bad Vanderbilt team, against a good Appalachian State team, and maybe on the road against a pretty decent Texas A&M team? But I think a lot of that's got to come from the players. I think that's got to be stepping up want and desire, and that's obviously easy for me to say because no one is telling me to want to grip a football really tight while getting hit really hard. But I think some of that kind of is what that comes down to, those little things, that little bit of will.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, if they don't have it at this point in the year, they're fighting for their bowl lives. I mean, this loss sets them up to a very tough road in that regard. It seemed kind of surprising to hear them say that a little bit, I guess.
It definitely did, and I think that kind of is what makes it resonate so much, is the fact that they did need that really, really badly. If for nothing else, you know, coming into this, you kind of thought they had a 3-game stretch where they could maybe craft their way to a bowl game. And to immediately drop the ball like that, to immediately lose to that Tennessee team. And granted, I think this Tennessee team might be a little better. You would have at least expected them to have to kind of high wire it for a little longer and see if that energy and push could sustain, rather than kind of have that go awry almost as soon as, you know, they started kind of the return of must-win season, as I called it.
And very briefly, just touching on the complete and total meltdown of all of this, is the fact that the special teams gave up 2 touchdowns, a punt return and then a blocked punt. I think one of our colleagues, Lou Bajak, wrote an article about this. That's just not something you typically see from this unit this year and under Will Muschamp throughout his entire time at South Carolina. But I think it kind of just served to emphasize, especially that blocked punt that was recovered for a TD. It felt like the wheels came off so fast, and they came off hard.
Yeah, I was looking back at some of it, and at that point, South Carolina was down 13. They were punting the ball away. And it was one of those moments when you thought, this is probably over, but you could see a weird, crazy college football way that this would come back. Not likely, but within the realm of crazy college football. And then that punt got blocked. South Carolina, it seemed like, released a lot of guys downfield, probably because they'd given up a punt return touchdown. And Tennessee sent 6 dudes and just plain overwhelmed the Gamecocks. And yeah, that kind of swung it pretty hard. I think some of those big plays given up earlier were probably a little more impactful, especially when they went down 10 and then went down 13. But it served sort of as that final hammer to kind of end things.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Looking at a big picture from this, because I don't think South Carolina fans are delighting too much in recounting every single way that this went wrong.
There were a lot, though.
There was a lot of, we could talk a lot about it, but I think let's look bigger picture. In the span of 2 weeks, has Will Muschamp completely burned all the goodwill he generated by upsetting No. 3 Georgia?
I think so. I mean, all of it? At least 95% of it, maybe more. I mean, realistically, part of what that win meant was getting to a bowl. If you don't get to a bowl, it was just sort of a weird, out-of-context big win. And that's notable in its own way. But if that had happened in year two, that would be one thing. But it happened in year four. And frankly, in year four, you should be going to a bowl. I know their schedule's hard, but if you're going to get one that was unexpected in Georgia, you can't really turn around and go lose more of those little weird toss-ups, especially to a team that lost to Georgia State and a BYU team that's only so-so. I mean, at this point, if he wants more goodwill, he's going to have to beat either Texas A&M, which would be the first time that South Carolina has done that, or he's going to have to beat Clemson. And either of those would fill up, you know, the goodwill tank in their own way and would leave us with a very confusing season. But yeah, I mean, that burns through most of that goodwill because, again, it set things up to be a little different after a bad start.
Yeah, I'm remembering the conversation we had after the Georgia game, and I was saying that maybe this was even the biggest upset in program history, and you were talking about, we'll wait and see, especially in the context of how this entire season plays out.
Yeah, it's just very weird to look at.
That's the thing I'm taking from all of this, is that it's just, it's hard to explain, it's hard to understand how a team could go from such a big result to such a confoundingly bad one in such a quick span. I mean, that's college football in some sense, but it is just, it's hard to wrap your mind around a little bit.
It's very college football, and I think to a degree, I can wrap my mind around it happening because college football is very strange. However, I then try to say, what did that mean, or can you put some context in it, or can you say, was that a big upset? Was that an important win? All that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just this very weird mishmash and this emotional roller coaster for Gamecocks fans because things seemed righted 2 weeks ago. And last week was an unpleasant loss for Gamecocks fans. But again, it wasn't as if, you know, they lost something that couldn't be recovered. And now this week they have lost something that cannot be recovered because even if they do somehow make a bowl game, this will be the season in which they have a transitive loss to Georgia State but made a bowl and got upset as a double-digit favorite against North Carolina to start the year.
Yeah, looking at all that, I did want to bring up one thing, not to pile on you, but you wrote an article before this game saying, was that the best three-game stretch of the Will Muschamp era? Meaning defeating Kentucky, defeating Georgia, losing closely to Florida. I don't know if you jinxed them or not, but we now have a very bad loss to Tennessee. You got Vanderbilt next week, which South Carolina is favored. The initial line came out, they're 16-point favorites, so they really should win. And then you have a very tough, deceptively tough game against App State. I mean, this may be projecting a little too far ahead, but we could be looking at maybe one of the worst three-game stretches of Will Muschamp's tenure, followed by what you're calling one of the best.
It's entirely possible, which is a very strange thing to think about. And I think at some point or another, someone asked, and I kind of couched that three-game stretch in, if the season goes sideways again, it probably loses some oomph. Now, granted, the best three-game stretch in the Muschamp era is probably Jake Bentley's first three starts because it salvaged what probably should have been a 4-8 season and turned it into a bowl season. But that being said, yeah, if things were to go really sideways and they were to play very bad against Vanderbilt and they were to lose to Appalachian State, that would be right up there. I'd have to go back and look at some of the schedules to see because the first year of the Muschamp era was not great. It depends if you count over seasons, because obviously Akron, Virginia, North Carolina is probably easily the worst run, at least by my counting. In either case, we've got a weird game where this South Carolina team that everyone's mad at is a more than 2-touchdown favorite, and then a top 25 G5 team coming in that South Carolina may well be favored against again.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. A lot of things could change, and who knows, they could bounce back against Vanderbilt and look like world beaters and take out App State and feel very good about where going into Texas A&M. But I think that just serves to highlight trying to get a handle on this season. I mean, we talk about it, we write about it, we think about it professionally, and I think we are just completely baffled by all of this.
Yeah, it's been a weird season, and Will Muschamp years have often given us weird seasons. This is probably the strangest, also almost assuredly going to be the worst, unless something weird happens at the end. And yeah, it's just sort of a question of where do we go from here, what comes next. We'll probably spend the rest of the week with fans asking us about job eventualities involving the football coach, maybe the AD, and beyond that, because that's how college football works. And I'm just going to kind of buckle in for whatever comes this week because it's going to be odd.
All right. We will be back on Wednesday to sort through more of this and to preview Vanderbilt and even to get a little bit into basketball season because that's finally here for both the men's and women's exhibition openers. In the meantime, please remember to subscribe, like, or follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.